I'm Rich Egger, and this is Emphasis. Today's guest is social justice activist Prexy Nesbitt, who was in Macomb this week to speak at Western Illinois University. You grew up in Chicago. How did you become interested in the anti-apartheid and solidarity movements in Africa?
Brother Egger, I was on the west side of Chicago and was part of a church called the Warren Avenue Congregational Church. The denomination today is known as the UCC, the United Church of Christ. My family was very active in that church. It was in the early stages of integrating that community, and the pastor of the church had a former roommate from Oberlin College, a man from Mozambique known as Eduardo Monlani. And Eduardo Monlani would later become the founder and first president of the Mozambique Liberation Front that fought against Portuguese colonialism and brought Mozambique to independence in 1975. Eduardo had also been in school with Nelson Mandela at the Witwatersrand University. So he was married to a white American woman, though, from the western suburbs. And when they married, her family said, forget about it. You marry him, don't ever bother talking to us. My family and many other families in that church became the new family for the two of them. So out of Antioch College, I took a year abroad in Tanzania. And at that point, the Mozambique Liberation Front was basing itself out of Tanzania. And I did a lot of work with them and under the encouragement of my friend Eduardo Monlani.
What year was that?
That was in 1965-66. And then I went back to work for them in 1968-69.
Can you explain what you thought and felt when you first arrived in Tanzania?
It was absolutely mind-opening experience for me because I had been fortunate to have been raised in a family that talked a lot about Africa. I had had uncles that were members of the Garveyite movement, for instance. But it was still so completely different from the United States. And it was such a different feel to it. Now, I think the other thing that was very important is that it was an atmosphere of freedom struggles. All of this was new to me, totally new. I mean, I got off the plane and the first thing that happened, a group of South African students took me to listen again and again to this Victrola, this RCA record recording of a speech that a man had given as he was sentenced to life imprisonment. And the man's name was Nelson Mandela. And I didn't know who he was. But we listened to the speech again. It had really just happened. I mean, 63, he was sentenced. They altered my whole framework of existence.
When you went there in the mid-60s, can you tell us about some of the people you met who influenced you?
I was very fortunate. I met some people that were some of the most extraordinary leaders of that period of time. I mean, if you take a man like J.B. Marks, J.B. Marks led the 1946 gold mine worker strike in South Africa, and he was just walking around. He was a contemporary of the great Chief Albert Luthuli, who won the Nobel Peace Prize. Luthuli was in South Africa, so I never met him, but I met people like Oliver Tambo. I met people like George Rebello, who was one of the great poets of the region. The president, Julius Nyerere of Tanzania. These were people that I worked with and I met and went to classes that they had and dinners with them. It was a completely different orientation towards leadership that I was given than what I was. I never met people like that in the United States. So although I came from a fairly prominent family on the West Side, but I didn't eat regularly with somebody that was going to be the president of a country.
But we don't hear those names often in the United States either or hear much about the struggles in Africa during that time period. Why do you suppose we don't know more about this or hear more about this?
You know, sadly, Africa remains even to this day this sort of great unknown, this massive continent. People think of Africa as a country. There's a great website, Africa is a Country, that sort of spoofs that notion that people have. But it's a great failing of the school systems and other systems of learning in this country, that we don't know even now anything about Africa, and that these tremendous names, tremendous leaders who've set real patterns. Instead, what we hear is Africa with all its problems, Africa with savagery, Africa with violence. You don't hear about the great thinkers. Very few people would know the name Amilcar Cabral, for example, the great leader of a country called Guinea-Bissau, who is probably, arguably, one of the most profound political thinkers of the 20th century.
How do some of these people compare to the U.S. civil rights leaders that perhaps we know a little bit better?
Well, there's no doubt about two things. Number one, those great civil rights leaders all very early recognized how important Africa was, so that you can't look at a person like Dr. Martin Luther King or Malcolm X or James Forman or James Farmer or Fannie Lou Hamer or people like Sister Baker, that these great, great figures that all recognized the importance of Africa and knew these leaders in Africa. I was very privileged, and when I came back from my first trip in 66, Dr. King was using my family's church on the west side as his base. And one day, one of the staff came to me and said, "Prexy, Dr. King wants to talk to you about Africa." And for 3 hours, I sat and I talked, answered questions for Dr. King. I think about that and I just sort of get goosebumps thinking about how great this man was. To hear this 19-year-old punk who'd made one little trip to Africa, and yet I had learned a lot, it's no question, but Dr. King was one of those great people who could listen to people.
Today you answer questions from audiences when you go out and speak at places such as Western Illinois University. What do you hope an audience comes away with after they hear you speak?
Well, I hope that the first question I do not hear is, "Tell me, Mr. Nesbitt, did you see any lions while we were there, or tigers?" And of course, that's doubly uninformed because there are no tigers in Africa. But it's also sad, because that is sadly what has been presented to Americans by and large about Africa. They know nothing about the issues related to Africa. They know very, very little about the greatness of some of the struggles that have taken place and are taking place, or about American, U.S., that is, government and corporate involvement with these issues. For example, we have cell phones. In every cell phone, there is a chemical item, that gibbidolite, I think it's called, that is absolutely essential, that comes from the Congo. It only can come from the Congo. And the mining of that item is done in horrible conditions for young people. But most people have no idea that that's what makes it possible for them to have a cell phone.
I'm glad you mentioned the struggles that are still going on today. What do you think someone in this country can do to help out with the situations in some of the countries in Africa?
Well, I think there are many things that can be done. One is to inform themselves. And there are some great sources. There's a wonderful online service, Africa News, that has been coming out for many, many years, allafrica.com. It's a tremendous resource. Africa Focus, another great. So informing themselves about Africa and these issues is number one. Number two, there are numbers of organizations that do a lot of work around Africa that are worth being in touch with. For example, the National Council of Churches runs several Africa programs that are really worthwhile and that they do a great job. The American Jewish World Service does some great work in different countries. There are some universities that have professors that do wonderful work. The man who's invited me here, Peter Coles, does some phenomenal work around issues related to Africa. But sadly, these undertakings get little projection, don't get as much projection. And instead, you just get these sort of massive stereotypes around Africa taking place. The current story of the miner strike in South Africa is a great example of that. All we're being told is that the miners are on strike, but we aren't told the kind of reimbursement and money that those who own those mines get and how unequal their earnings are compared to those men who, I say men because they have, women haven't historically been allowed to work in the mines, the kind of earnings those men get in horrible conditions when they go down into those mines to mine gold and platinum and all of the minerals we have to run this economy.
It's actually similar to, I think, strikes in this country. You hear workers are on strike, but it
never hear about the issues.
Yeah, other than perhaps wages, but they don't delve into some of the real issues.
They don't go into the conditions people have to work in. I have seen mines where men have to work all day long on their back, holding a jackhammer over their stomach, up into the rock and earth. And just all of that piles out all around them. Conditions that are just unbelievable. And people die. Still death rates that are just phenomenal. 1.5 per shift or something like that is an average. These are things that are really part of why people are on strike. Not because of the pittance more that they might earn.
Do you hold out hope for future generations that perhaps the people are or will become more aware of conditions such as this?
My experience has been in 40 years of teaching in the Chicago area, different colleges. I share with young people these stories, and there's a thirst that it awakens in them to want to do things, to want to see things. So I have great faith that when people learn things, then they want to learn more, and they want to see places.
When were you last in Africa? What countries did you visit?
I was in July in Mozambique and South Africa. I will leave again in November. I have take regular groups with a wonderful organization I have called Making the Road, and we go regularly, 2-3 week trips, very inexpensive trips.
What did you see and do when you were in Mozambique in July?
When I was in July in Mozambique, we visited with one of the country's foremost leaders, George Rebello. We spent time in rural Mozambique in the countryside. We talked with women's organizations. Mozambique has a tremendous problem with HIV/AIDS, and there are wonderful and creative ways that they're dealing with that problem. And then we spent time on what are some of the most phenomenal beaches anywhere in the world. Make California. People would never go to California anymore if they visited the beaches of Mozambique.
Frexy Nesbitt is a social justice activist visiting Western Illinois University. We're out of time for today. I hope you enjoy the rest of your visit to Macomb.
I loved it, and I'm sure I will like it. It's been great so far. Thank you for your show. I wish we had a show like this in Chicago. We've got to find a way to pipe you up that way.
I'll see what I can do about that.
Thank you very much.
For Tri-States Public Radio News, I'm Rich Egger.